Press, read Haaretz. Read the statements by
17
Israeli human rights groups.
Ralph Nader, we want to thank you for being with us. Longtime consumer advocate, corporate critic, four-time former presidential candidate. We'll link to your article in the Capitol Hill Citizen, Exposing the Gaza Death Undercount. That does it for our show. Watch tonight's debate between Donald Trump and Kamala Harris at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
Abstinence means not having sex, right? But what is sex? An intercourse? And what the heck is outer course? Well, people define sex, abstinence, and outer course in different ways. For some people, abstinence means not doing any kind of fooling around. No oral sex, vaginal sex, anal sex, nothing. They're abstaining from it all. Not only does this type of abstinence do a great job of preventing pregnancy, it's 100% effective, it also guarantees you won't get a sexually transmitted infection. For some other people, abstinence means not having vaginal intercourse. They do the other stuff, just not the thing that can lead to a pregnancy. All that other stuff is what we mean by outer course. Outer course is sex play without the penetration. It's like intercourse without the inner... you get it. Kissing, touching, grinding, massage, masturbation, sex talk, all of that can be lumped into what's called outer course. Outer course is also a great method of birth control. As long as no sperm get in the vagina, there's no risk of pregnancy. And if you avoid vaginal, anal, and oral sex, you reduce your risk for sexually transmitted infections as well. Like all methods of birth control, abstinence and outer course are more effective the longer and better you use them. They require determination, self-control, trust, and good communication. It also helps to know about other ways to protect yourself from unintended pregnancy and STDs, just in case you decide to have intercourse. If you'd like to learn more about outer course and abstinence, you should check out PlannedParenthood.org. If you're a teen, you might want to look into Teen Talk. There's tons of information and discussions.
Latino New Yorkers were 8 times more likely to be arrested for cannabis than white New Yorkers over the past 30 years. Black New Yorkers, 15 times more likely. White, black, or brown, data shows we all use cannabis at the same rate. Now New York has changed course and legalized cannabis for adults 21 and over. We are building an equitable industry that invests in communities. Learn more and visit cannabis.ny.gov.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook, broadcasting at 90.1 FM and 107.3 on your FM dial. Also on the internet at WUSB.FM. 6 o'clock, Tuesday, time for another edition of Off the Wall. No, I'm not going to let the whole theme play. Get really, really close to it, but that's the extended intro to Off the Wall, which will change next January when we have a new president. For some reason, that's why the theme changes. Good evening, Off the Wall. Manuel here, Kyle over there.
Yo, what'd I miss?
You know what? You might
miss something.
You might miss Democracy, Kyle. You might miss.
No, Democracy Now ended on time.
No.
I heard that.
No, I didn't mean that. I didn't mean that.
No, Democracy's over. Now it's off.
That's what it's going to be called next year. No, Amy has said this. Democracy over. Yeah. Okay. You know, you might make fun of us. Sure. Go ahead. Join everybody else. Make fun of us. Say that we're exaggerating. We're catastrophists. Is that the right word?
Wait. I just walked in the room, and you're mentioning that democracy is over.
Well, okay. First of all, are you nervous? Are you nervous? Because I'm nervous.
This is about tonight.
It's about tonight. I am nervous as
see.
Hell.
I don't
want to. Let me at least get the explanation out.
Go ahead.
I am nervous as hell. And, yeah, this show makes me very nervous, but no, it's not that. It's what comes 2 hours after this show ends at 9 o'clock.
Okay, can you move that? Whatever interference you have, it's...
Okay,
sorry.
I put my phone next
USB
to...
USB is not shielded.
You hear something that I don't hear, and you make me move my phone all the way over to the other side of the room.
Throw it out the door.
I need my phone. I need to look at things on the phone.
For why? Okay, fine. Put it on the floor.
Okay.
You're worried... See, I didn't want to come in. I know you're anticipating all this, and you're stressed about it, and everything's stressful, but this is particularly stressful. Just drink, slurp your coffee. I got this. I didn't want to come in here and have to, like, throw the pom-poms in the air about why and who and what. You know what? Just
watch.
Do whatever. Do you, America?
I can't sip my coffee unless you're saying something. yes. Okay, so the debate is tonight, in case you didn't glean that. Kamala Harris versus Donald Trump. It's weird. They never met. I just found that out. They have never met in person. That is going to be something right there. And not the highlight for sure, but this could very well be their only meeting, their only debate. Haven't heard any reports of a vice presidential debate. I would look forward to that as well. But this pretty much is going to be the most decisive debate probably in our lifetimes, and it's happening tonight. I don't even know what network to watch it on, because it's on all the networks. It's on all the channels. You can't escape this. We will not be broadcasting it on WUSB, but other stations will. And, you know, you don't have to watch it, but I suggest you do, because seriously... Our future is at stake here. This is a big one. This one could not be more stark. There was an article that came out yesterday in Rolling Stone, which I suggest everybody read. It's called What If Trump Wins? It will scare you. It's not just somebody hysterically ranting, as I might be prone to do. No. This is somebody who's done research. This is somebody who has talked to members of his team, ex-members of his team. This is somebody with knowledge of what this could possibly spell out. And, you know, I printed this out, and it didn't print the author's name. I'm sorry. It didn't print the name for some reason. Let's go to rollingstone.com and type in What If Trump Wins, and you'll find it.
I think Tim or Tom Dickinson.
Are you guessing? I mean, what if it's not? What if there's somebody else there?
Well, I was reading it.
Okay. It's scary, right? It's a scary article.
Well, I haven't finished it.
It's big. It's a big, scary article.
It's a very long
article. Yeah, yeah. I've got 14 pages of printed text here.
Yeah, but I think it's several authors.
So, okay, so this is... Bear with me for a second. I want you to imagine. Imagine Trump back in power. Imagine him seething about gang members and drug lords. Imagine him saying he wanted to see their bodies piled up in the streets. Specifically... He wants a series of mass executions, firing squads, and gallows, and certainly without the quaintness of an appeals process to send a chilling message about the scope of his power. Yeah. Well, you don't have to imagine, folks, because that actually happened. That was in his second year back in 2018. Yeah. effing kill them all, he would say. An eye for an eye. You just got to kill these people. Other countries do it all the time. He had a particular affinity for the firing squad, says one of the former White House officials. He'd say they need to be eradicated, not jailed. This is who he is. It's America's death squad ideas. That's what administration officials privately referred to as. Comparing to the drug war bloodbath carried out by Filipino strongman Rodrigo Duterte. Might remember him. Of course, the sources requested anonymity because they're scared for their lives. Now, if Trump defeats Kamala Harris this November, America will encounter a Trump unbound, a man whose darkest impulses will not be checked by adults in the room, creating potentially catastrophic consequences for the American experiment. This election is about whether or not we remain a democratic society or we move to authoritarianism. That's Senator Bernie Sanders saying that Trump does not believe in the basic tenets and foundations of American democracy. Those safeguards that kept Trump in check during that first term, they've collapsed. Those safeguards are gone because of the magnification of the Republican Party. We know from the first administration that Trump was an amateur, and lots of people stopped his most radical actions. That's according to Jason Stanley, a Yale professor, author of How Fascism Works. He underscores that Trump's darkest ambitions were present from the beginning. From the Muslim ban to the coup attempt of January 6th, the only thing that stopped him from being a full-on dictator was other people. We know that's not going to happen anymore. Now, a second administration won't feature advisors in the mold of former Chief of Staff John Kelly or Defense Secretary Mark Esper. Those are establishment Republicans with a stake in keeping Trump constitutionally in bounds. Michael Clareman, Harvard Law professor, says these are going to be all MAGA people now. Some of them are much more ideologically committed to the agenda than Trump is. Yeah, think about that. More MAGA than Trump. People like Stephen Miller, Russell Voigt, as well as masterminds of the Heritage Foundation's Extreme Policy Agenda Project 2025. You know, the one they keep trying to distance themselves from, but which really speaks to everything that they stand for. Now, even more dangerous, Trump would re-enter the Oval Office with powers that have been supercharged by the ultra-conservative Supreme Court, which Trump helped build as president. A partisan 6-3 decision in July placed the presidency beyond the reach of criminal punishment for any acts that can be couched as official. The once outrageous Nixonian maxim, when the president does it, that means it's not illegal. Today, that's a statement of fact. Leading Justice Sonia Sotomayor to warn in a fiery dissent, in every use of official power, the president is now a king above the law. Excerpt from the Rolling Stone article yesterday, but nothing really that surprising. It's just, it's good to see it acknowledged, good to see people taking it seriously. Is it going to be enough? You know, if Harris doesn't do good tonight, you know, he could be strengthened, he could wind up making up whatever he lost since the Democratic Convention. It's scary to think that people actually buy into the nonsense that he peddles. The latest thing, Kyle, I don't know if you heard about this, the craziness that's being spread about Haitian immigrants eating people's dogs and cats, hanging them from trees. I saw this over the weekend. You know, it appeared on Twitter, that right-wing bastion of nonsense, and it actually picked up steam to the point where the president and vice presidential candidates for the Republican Party were alluding to it as fact. And they basically just keep making things up. Well, one of the things I've seen in the last couple of days, apparently school kids go to school and get a sex change operation and then come back that afternoon. Trump literally said that in front of a cheering throng of people. It doesn't matter anymore. The truth doesn't matter. Facts don't matter. They can make up anything, and his followers will go along with it. How do you win against something like that? How do you counter when you know facts no longer matter? It's a scary time. It really is scary.
Well, I'll point out how illogical it is, and fill the remainder of your time with what is going on with the populace instead of that, and make it a somewhat, I think, compelling way to go, like leadership-wise. I mean, I don't know if just cheering for anything someone says is
the kind of leadership people are craving.
Well, it's what has propelled Trump to have the kind of staying power that I still can't believe. Remember when we introduced the Trump machine? It was a joke back then. It was a joke. We didn't think it would ever catch on. It, not only did it catch on, you can't stamp it out. It's like a malignancy that really won't quit. Yeah, that's how I characterize it. I'm happy with that. So tonight is key for many reasons, because if Harris looks presidential, I think that will solidify her in a lot of people's minds who have still not made up their minds. I don't understand how somebody could not make up their minds by now, but I realize there are other things going on in other people's lives, and sure, maybe you don't know if she's going to be any better or if she might even somehow be worse. So if she looks like somebody who can handle the job and has policies that are based on reality, you know, something different, I think that will turn a lot of people. I hope that will turn a lot of people, because I can't think of anything else that will work. Now, a couple of things. 9/11 is tomorrow. Today is September 10th. How people talk about 9/11. I think that's going to matter. I think if somebody is seen to in any way not be paying due respect to the people whose lives were lost, to first responders, all of that, that's going to hurt them. And I think Trump is more capable of offending people in that regard than anyone. So what people say about that, if anything, will be key. Another thing, we just had a launch this morning. We actually watched it. What's it called again?
Polaris Dawn.
Polaris Dawn. Okay. Launched on a Falcon 1 rocket, right?
Yeah, it's the name is like the cross between a car and a dish soap, but yeah, it's going to be cool. Five days in space.
Well,
private science endeavor, new suits, new communications, stuff and things, and then they're going to land.
Look, I hate Elon Musk, really do, full-on fascist, will follow Trump anywhere. I don't know how this happens to people, but it does. I mean, Tulsi Gabbard, it's, you know, Robert F. Kennedy, these people you would never think would follow Trump, they drink the Kool-Aid, and they go right along with them. So, you know, hold on to the people around you, folks. It could happen to them, could happen to you, could happen to me. Do you think that could happen to me? Wow. It's a scary thought. But, okay, so...
Wait, what happened?
I'm just imagining myself drinking the Trump Kool-Aid and suddenly
ew.
Defending him.
Spit that out, no.
But how does
so
it happen?
So many other things.
How did it happen? I mean, okay, RFK Jr. was a lunatic from the start. I grant you that. Tulsi Gabbard, she was just somebody I never trusted, and it turns out I was right about that. But she's full-on Trump now as well. Elon Musk, I thought he had a bit more sense. I really did. But he doesn't. And how do I feel about Elon Musk? I've already said. But I love what SpaceX is doing. But I don't think that means that I'm giving Elon Musk credit for anything other than writing a few checks. He's not the science behind it. He's not the thousands of people that helped get that thing up into space. He's not the people cheering whenever something good happens. So I'm not going to sacrifice my support of the space program because of a jerk who happens to find himself in a key position and has a lot of money. You know, I'm not going to do that. So, yeah, I'm thrilled that the thing went up. And this is the first, civilian spacewalk, I think, either tomorrow or the next day. Probably the next day. You shouldn't do it at 9/11, I don't think. A stepping stone to going back to the moon. Another stepping stone towards Mars. These are good things. These are things I've been pushing for ever since I was a child. And it's good to see them finally happening. And you know, private travel is the way to do it.
Yeah, much, much more consequential than the sort of, I guess, identity and other kinds of toxic politics that seem to be a hobby of some of the leaders in this. But I think your statement about it being the result of investment and the accomplishments of many, 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 many people, many more than any one sort of demigod of industry.
I mean, considering how many people who work for Twitter or used to work for Twitter or whatever it's called now, how many of those people hate his guts? I would venture to say that a fair number of people at SpaceX hate his guts, too.
Yeah, I mean, that might be a new market that has emerged out of these endeavors. I mean, there's been comment about it from the person, the man himself. But, like, you know, haters do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's, you know, it's about where you're putting your energy, whether you're on one or the other side of it. And but that's a thriving marketplace. And I don't know. I think I'm not sure everyone's always on the same page about how that's going for them. And it does seem to change. I mean, change can be big and fast, but it can emerge over time that, you know, attitudes shift. And I just think the science and the actual accomplishments behind some of these whiz-bang brands will transcend it, or the brands themselves as the culmination of those endeavors, much more beyond just, like, money. I mean, if you're just putting money into something, I mean, there's many people that could be doing that who perhaps didn't or are not, but, yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, his true personality comes out when he gets into these kerfuffles with entire countries, like Brazil being the latest example, where he just didn't want his organization to follow their law. And that law requires people who are from the ultra-right fascist representation of society, or people who are posting hate speech or whatnot, that those accounts be deleted, at least in Brazil. And he refuses to do that, and it's kind of scary to see somebody with that much power butting heads with an entire country, and getting support from various places as well. So, yeah.
Well, I just let's not get ahead of ourselves. We're, as much as they think they know everything about everyone, and are learning so much about the world from their vast endeavors, society's learning from these people too.
Uh-huh.
About how they're running their enterprise, how they're treating others, and there's side effects to that as well.
The thing is, when you control the medium, as Elon Musk does, you have so much more power as far as getting your message to people. You look at it now. Whenever you post something on Twitter, all the comments are people just sucking up to him. Nobody criticizing him anymore because those people are muted. Yeah, they might be able to post, but nobody's going to see their post. I post now, and I get like 60 views in a day as opposed to several thousand just a couple of years ago.
But slow down. How is that not perfect?
What do you mean?
Would you wish anything else upon such an individual, someone that owns something like that, to only have that in there? That's perfect.
Well, yeah, the thing I worry about is that it's growing, that this is how you build support.
Faster.
Yeah.
Please, let it go all the way to his damn head.
You know, there was a Simpsons episode a number of years ago where Lisa Simpson made reference to President Trump, and it was a funny joke then. It was a funny joke to say President Trump back in, what, 2008 or something. I'm going to say President Musk and hope it remains a joke. But please, people, check in on this show a decade or so from now. And is that still a joke? Is that still funny? Or or did that happen? Because I don't know anymore. I don't know this place. It kind of scares me. And I'm worried, you know, if Trump does win this thing, will this be my country anymore? Will I want to be here? Will I even be able to be here? Wait, why are you so freaked out? Why should I not be freaked
it's
out?
It's one debate. This debate was played so long
ago. I'm talking about the election now.
Oh, the whole election.
Yeah, the whole
okay.
damn election. The whole damn future of the country.
Gosh, I was going to say, this is like drastic. Mm-hmm. I mean, even for this program,
yeah.
Where we talk from all different corners of an issue.
Dude, I bought a tank on eBay, okay?
Wait, whoa.
I'm not kidding when I say this. Do you know it's really hard to park those things because they mess up the road? And, yeah, the town doesn't like that, apparently. So, yeah, I got to keep it in a warehouse for now. But it's also hard to fuel. It's a whole lot of things I'm learning. But, yeah, you know, it's going to be a different world if that happens. And I don't know. It's going to be a change in the theme music for sure. But I don't know what else is going to be changing. Let's delve into this. Go ahead.
Let's just stay in the here and now. We'll have, I guess, some understanding of how this conversation between the two candidates goes. And
hang on. I just want to step out of the here and now for a second. I'm kind of sick of the here and now. We're doing another project where Kyle found a new skill where he can fix broken videotapes. You open them up and you put them together.
This was in the works.
It's like you suddenly realize you're a surgeon and you didn't know that.
We had all the tools. We were ready for this.
It was in the works in that we had to do it, but we didn't know that either of us had the skill to do it, and I'm pretty sure I don't have that skill.
Well, you've a history doing this with cassettes.
Audio cassettes. Yeah, which makes sense. Video cassettes, less so. But you did it yesterday, I think, or 2 days ago, and I was amazed, and you just keep fixing all the broken ones. So now we're encoding. I collect videotapes. I've collected them since the 1980s. You know, I just would hit record on a TV set and let it go. And right now, in this room that we are in right now, we have a TV set from the 1980s with a tube and everything. It's really cool. Great TV set. It has never broken once since the 1980s. Belonged to my grandmother. Now it's mine. I used it until everything went digital or we had flat screens and things like that. So we're encoding 8-hour tapes now, and the video is playing as we're doing other things. Right now I see Bill Clinton on the Arsenio Hall show.
Yes.
Wow, it's that famous one where he plays saxophone, right?
Yeah, I don't think he's actually played yet unless I wasn't watching it. But yeah, it's pretty outstanding to just sit here and see him be interviewed on a late-night program from then.
That's incredible. And not only that, you know, just the aura of TV back then, you know, with the commercials, with the news breaks. There was so much more news back then. They would break every half hour to give you a news update.
Yeah, and this was when I was really starting to watch TV over basically the same format on these tube sets, mm-hmm. like color 4x3 or whatever. Wow. 480p is what we're putting it into.
So occasionally we can just sort of jump back into the past and marvel at the innocence back then.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's working very well.
Is that Hillary sitting next to him?
Yes.
Okay, so they're both on. Wow.
Yes, she's sitting next to Arsenio.
Okay, back to the present. So, this Rolling Stone article, which I'm going to read a couple more excerpts from, Trump's effort to regain power is driven substantially by his desire to stay out of prison, part of a long pattern of putting his own interest ahead of the nation's. He is a felon convicted on 34 counts stemming from the cover-up of a hush money payout to a porn star at the height of the 2016 election. He also faces federal charges for election interference, as well as a Georgia indictment for his demand that GOP election officials find 11,780 votes to reverse his loss in that swing state. You know, I've heard that number so many times. How many people here, how many listeners, 11,780, realize that's the zip code for St. James, 11780? Every time I hear that, there's a little bit of pride, I feel, you know?
It's funny how that lined up. No, I mean, it's not, but it's just, it is.
No, it's funny. You know, you got to get humor where you can.
It's a local reference, I guess, yeah. For the Stony Brook audience.
Yeah. Well, St. James is next to Stony Brook. It's also in a different town. It's in Smithtown, not Brookhaven, but, you know.
Wait.
Neighbors get along.
What is it? I like to make things factual,
you know, it's my middle name.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, nobody else seems to want to do that anymore.
Well, not as much. No. I mean, it kind of took the energy out of what I was saying. It's just, you know, local reference, you might get it, but maybe not.
You know, we're a small radio station, we're a smaller radio show on a small radio station, and sometimes I feel like our voices don't really matter that much, not really heard, not paid attention to.
Well, what I've realized is such a large market, I'm incredibly humbled by how insignificant this place makes you. Like, mm-hmm. it's something you're aware of, I think, in the suburbs and in other markets and other cities, but it's really, like, it cuts you down,
yeah.
Right, like, to the core.
You're nothing. Like, you're just
so insignificant. significant, inconsequential.
You're a bit of dandruff on an ant's head.
Yeah. Like, whatever you're... And that's sort of like, I can see where it drives people totally insane.
Insane. Completely crazy.
Like,
bonkers.
Lose it, because they just are out of touch with the thought of anything. It's just so paralyzing in the face of how insignificant you are. And so to be on the airwaves, coming to grips with that along with everyone else, I don't know. I guess it's... I get to embody that with everyone.
You know, I had a but in that statement when I started it.
Now, okay.
I seem to have lost it. So, yeah, we're tiny, insignificant, not of much value whatsoever. But I literally forgot. Okay, well, I guess this sentence sort of gives me a little bit of... not hope, but just kind of affirmation. There's no nemesis too small. So in Trump land, it doesn't matter how small you are. If you're an enemy, you're an enemy. So we're not that small.
What about frenemies?
No, not in this scenario. The tally even includes late night comics who've pissed him off as president. Trump briefly attempted to get justice officials to twist campaign finance laws and the federal equal time rule to declare that anti-Trump material broadcast by SNL, Jimmy Kimmel, Steve Colbert, and others was somehow illegal. Yeah, during his 2024 campaign, according to a source with direct knowledge, Trump has raised this topic again, venting about the need to punish late-night comedians for giving illegal campaign contributions to the Democratic Party in the form of jokes and on-air satire. So in his deranged mind, us talking about this now is a contribution to the Democratic Party, an illegal contribution, and we need to be punished.
No, you can have it for free.
Yeah.
Free.
This is...
Extra free.
It's what dictators do. It's what fascists do. Echoing many dangerous authoritarian leaders in modern history, Trump has put ethnic cleansing at the heart of a second-term agenda, promising the mass deportation of millions of undocumented immigrants. And just remember, undocumented does not mean a law is being broken. It means something is pending. But whatever. He has referred to migrants as animals and vermin, whom he accuses of poisoning the blood of the country. The idea of purification is central to fascist ideology. Bernie Sanders lost family in the Holocaust. He calls the rhetoric Hitlerian. Much of the rhetoric at Trump's nominating convention in Milwaukee was devoted to an alleged epidemic of migrant crime, focusing on isolated, high-profile murders of white women, like Lakin Riley, a Georgia college student who was allegedly killed by an undocumented Venezuelan man who has pleaded not guilty. Crime data shows that immigrants are less likely to commit crimes than native-born Americans, but MAGA convention delegates weren't about to let facts get in the way of their feelings, eagerly waving signs demanding mass deportation. Now, I saw that at the convention. What a weird thing to hold up at a convention where feelings are supposed to be kind of positive. Mass deportation now. I don't know. This is kind of crazy. Enacting mass deportation will trigger civil unrest that could in turn give Trump an excuse for a violent crackdown on progressive cities. That's according to Michael Klarman, a Harvard law professor. You're just going to grab them and nobody's going to try to stop you, he asks, of targeted immigrants or woven into communities as spouses, employees, and neighbors. I expect massive civil disobedience and then violence if Trump decides to suppress it using the military. Yeah, absolutely.
Expect, be sure.
Yeah.
Are you kidding? That wouldn't be resisted? You have got another thing coming. Like, that is so wildly antithesis to the sort of values this country. I mean, we cannot be this schizophrenic, especially to vulnerable people that are coming in and being under the assumption of one set of laws, and then we're, like, switching them around and saying go home or whatever that, you know, and with a wildly flawed criteria. That does not by any means speak to every situation. That's bonkers.
And I guarantee you that these targeted immigrants, as was mentioned, they're woven into communities. Yeah, they are. You know them. They're people that you interact with on a daily basis, and they're law abiding, tax paying, Social Security contributing, waiting for their status to be resolved. And these are the targets of Trump's wrath.
Well, and it's like scapegoat for the bloodlust, because there is that streak of that these are there's the permissiveness. This is the sort of rationale to allow the behavior, which is being discreetly described as you know, punitive to a huge cross section of our, like you said, communities, neighbors, workforces. And it's just, it's schizophrenic policy. Like, it's so crazy that the bills put forth to work on this were denied because of the election, because of pressure that he put on. And we're coming back to it. And it's just, it's a form of boogeyman that they can channel this sort of hatred into.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow to normalize it and what they want to do, demonstrate their sort of quote consequences in these brutal clampdowns and reactions,
mm-hmm.
to think that that's going to go unremarked and people won't fight back,
right.
and won't try to protect others through every sort of means in the community possible. Like, you're attacking your own citizenry.
Yeah.
On the basis of a political hatred and racism.
Some of the hardest workers, some of the people who keep the economy going. It's basically relying on prejudice and hatred. And, you know, it's not to say that, immigration is not something that needs to be improved. We need better systems. But keep in mind, that's exactly what we had earlier this year. And Trump instructed the Republicans to just not accept it. It would have solved a lot of problems. But by accepting it, might have solved the problem too much, and wouldn't have given him these hate speaking points to harp on and get people to cheer him. Yeah, nothing worse than solving the problem before you get to complain about it. So that is something I sure hope Kamala Harris brings that up tonight. I really, really do. Now, moving on with this, presidents have broad authority to deploy the military in domestic operations thanks to the Insurrection Act of 1807, which permits the use of armed forces in times of civil unrest, and Trump has been explicit in his desire to engage troops against demonstrators. I would certainly use the National Guard if the police were unable to stop urban unrest, and he defines that as just any day in New York City. He said this to Time magazine this April. He did not rule out a response by the military. He has publicly rebuked mayors of Democratic crime dens, in quotes, for not being tough enough on protesters, and vowed, "The next time, I'm not waiting." Meaning he's going to send the military into a city that does not want the military there. How do you think that's going to go? How do you think that's going to turn out? Something else. Oh, go ahead.
Well, the illogical or like the just cognitive dissonance of it. Like, you do not, just the lawsuits alone. Do you think cities fighting back against this, they're all just going to be like fine with the military using force against people? Like, it's so
he doesn't care
un-American.
He doesn't care if they're fine or not. He intends to just do it.
Right, right. But there are people that live in these places.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't care about them. Not at all. They're Democrats. They're the enemy. Something else that that fascists tend to go for is reproduction. Yeah, controlling reproduction. Yet another hallmark of fascism. That's according to Ben Ghiat, whose expertise is in Benito Mussolini's rule in Italy. Il Duce, another name for him, equated population growth with national strength. and restricted birth control and outlawed abortion while providing loans to married couples that would be forgiven in stages with the birth of each child. Yeah, J.D. Vance may not know that he's repeating Mussolini proposals, but it's the same stuff, according to Ben-Ghiat. You have women seen as an enemy if they're not contributing to the state by having babies. It's almost word for word what we're hearing from them. Ben-Ghiat underscores that Trump has already distorted American ideas about voting and elections. She calls Trump one of the most effective propagandists in history for having convinced tens of millions of people in an extraordinary feat of mass deception that he won the 2020 election. Trump is seeking to weaponize the Department of Justice to buttress such lies by creating an Office of Election Integrity. That's according to sources familiar with the discussions with the former president. The unit would use federal power to investigate Democratic majority areas where Trump baselessly claims fraud is rampant and intimidate groups that fund election infrastructure. Yeah, reflecting his mindset, Trump told an interviewer in September, that's this month, that a president has every right to interfere in his own election. So yeah, it's scary. It's dangerous. It's historic. And we need to pay attention. Because these things happen when people don't pay attention. These things happen when people sleep. And just eking out a victory against Trump at the ballot box is no guarantee his threat won't linger, according to this Rolling Stone article. His supporters on election boards in states like Georgia are already threatening to monkey wrench the reporting of results, and Trump has talked about the possibility of a bloodbath if he loses. Yeah, increasingly violent rhetoric is what we're seeing. It's what we're witnessing. He's not afraid anymore. It's not just one statement, says Bernie Sanders, insisting that Trump's long track record suggests he will not abide by election results. The Vermont senator points to Trump's recent claim that huge crowds attending Harris Walz rallies are AI-generated. Yeah, that was only a couple of weeks ago. Somebody that can tell you that what you saw with your own eyes is not true, Sanders says, will doubtless claim election fraud if he loses later this year. And Sanders insists the election will be close. That is what worries me right now, he says. We have got to prepare the American people for what could be a very contentious and difficult period. This election is not normal. It's not a choice between left and right, nor even fundamentally between two slates of policy proposals. It's a choice between a Harris-Walz campaign, on one hand, that is committed to upholding the norms of our republic and continuing America's halting progress toward a more inclusive, multi-ethnic democracy, and on the other, a Trump-Vance ticket that would place America on a dark path backward toward mistrust, racial division, and unconstrained executive power. Bernie Sanders concludes saying, beyond all the issues on immigration, on women's rights, on climate, this election really is about whether or not we want to maintain and strengthen our democracy, the right of the people to control their own future, or whether we want to move toward an authoritarian society. And you know, saying those words, and again, the Rolling Stone article came out yesterday, is what I've been quoting from. It's entitled, What If Trump Wins? I have to wonder, I'm trying to figure out what goes through people's heads when they say, you know what, I'm still okay with him. You want to say the word cult, you know? You want to say you're believing whatever somebody says without any evidence, however crazy it may seem. And, you know, up until a little while ago, you were not like that. You were somebody who expressed cynicism and doubt when people told you things without any evidence. And now it's okay to just follow them. I don't know. I mean, are we all susceptible to it? I guess I'm coming back to this. Could it happen to us? You're shaking your head, Kyle. You don't think so?
I don't want to do this. I don't want to be here. I don't want to be saying this. I don't want to be talking about this. It's so reductive. To put that to me, it's like driving me to second guess myself, and like, it's insulting to my intelligence and my understanding of our civil society, this ideal. And I don't want to be a part of it. I don't want to sit. I told you I didn't want to bring the pom poms and try to cheerlead democracy and handhold. And I mean, I will see them in hell. I have zero respect anymore. Like, to be put to, like, respond to this article, like, I don't need this. This is not for me. And I don't need to be here. I don't want to talk any more about this guy.
Believe me, I don't.
Like, it's taken everything from this medium and, like, driving home points. Like, I don't care. I don't care anymore, like, personally. I am not invested in being the guy. I would like not to be a part of wrapping our heads, trying to make sense of insane people. That's not me. That's not my hobby. I don't need to be on the airwaves for that. I'm done. Like, I'm completely, like, I cannot be upbeat about this on the air anymore.
Do I seem upbeat?
I don't want to be here for this.
Do I seem upbeat? This is a serious matter. This is something that damn well affects everybody. Whether they want it to affect them or not, it affects them. It absolutely affects them.
I think the soap opera's on now.
Oh, is it? I never taped a soap opera. This has to be by accident. But, yeah, we're watching 1990s TV in the background.
It's like a hospital or something?
You know, okay, I'm done. I'm sorry. I'm sorry for dragging everybody down. It's just a debate was tonight, you know, and I figured I'd get in the spirit. All right. Write to us, otw@2600.com. Okay, how about we talk about Governor Hochul for a second. Last Wednesday, she signed more exemptions to an 1892 law created to tame lawless saloons that prohibits sale of liquor within 200 feet of houses of worship and schools. Guess what? You can do that now. Yeah, the bills passed by the state legislature sent to Hochul this month follow an effort in Albany during and since the pandemic to expand alcohol sales and sites where alcohol can be sold as an economic development tool to help the economy rebound. What a great idea. Now, why don't you do the same damn thing for dispensaries, huh? Why are there still no dispensaries in Brookhaven or in Riverhead or all over the place? Because of all these crazy restrictions that you can't be near a dance studio or within sight of a church or a school or a house. What do you think happens at dispensaries? I can tell you, you know, every 7-Eleven sells beer, you know, and you don't have any problem with 7-Elevens, like, right next to houses and schools. But for some reason, the controlled sale, the very controlled sale of marijuana, of cannabis, that is something that, even though it's completely legal in this state, even though we're allowed to have 5 pounds of marijuana in our homes, even though we're allowed to grow in our own gardens, all of a sudden, you have to restrict where people can buy it to the point where you have to drive to Queens to get it. It's insane. And alcohol, really? I mean, alcohol has been... I'm taking a road safety course, by the way, so I'm learning these things. Alcohol plays a part in over 90% of all traffic accidents. Plays a role in over 90%. Yeah, tens of millions of dollars. Wasted, thrown away, people's lives destroyed by drunk drivers. You cannot say the same thing about marijuana. No, you should not drive while high. We say that all the time. But people are less likely to. And people are less likely to act aggressive. And people are less likely to do all kinds of mean, horrible things that drunk people do. And cannabis has been proven to have health benefits when administered properly. So why is it we can't get them to ease up on these crazy restrictions that make it impossible to open dispensaries, and they just make it all the easier to have bars everywhere? Yeah, I'm actually more upset about this. You have something, Kyle?
Well, not allowing access, like limiting the retail, disallows the marketplace from emerging to make those things accessible, make them widely understood so people can get on to understanding dosages and quality. And I think the quality in New York still is, it's okay, but it's not great.
It's too expensive. It's too expensive, and it's better on the West Coast. Look, I will admit to that, even though I'm not a smoker, and, you know, I'm allied to the East Coast, but yeah.
Those places have been legal longer.
That's
true.
They've
been growing a lot longer in some cases, like certain areas of California, et cetera, et cetera. They're widely, but they embraced and brought in as much as possible. I mean, there's flaws everywhere in how this has been implemented.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the first person to say New York should be cautious and go slowly. So
that's too slow.
I'll own that fully, and that's important for, like, all concerns about labeling and off-license establishments places that do not
it's
have
been
licenses.
Been legal since Governor Cuomo.
But they've been...
Mario, not Andrew. No, I'm kidding.
They've been hampering so much at the distribution and, like, the retail level that people... There's still wide variation, and I think a lot of the quality and the growers are still emerging and trying to recoup costs, which I think ultimately affects quality and what the consumers are getting.
Look, you want to learn, go to an existing dispensary. There are a couple in Babylon, I believe, and talk to the people there. Listen to the customers. Listen to the interactions and realize how educated people are, how civil people are, how safe it is. We'll see you next week. Good night.
Another moment.